A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by CarePlus Pharmacy. CarePlus is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. You can find your nearest CarePlus on careplus.ie or follow them on social media for daily health and wellness tips. Anne Ebel was 48 years old when she was diagnosed with breast cancer for the first time in 2003. Anne joins me today along with Carol Mallon, who was diagnosed in 2004, and Marion Egan, who is living with a metastatic diagnosis. Each of my guests here in the studio with me today have dealt with their diagnosis differently. They have each had different side effects and challenges associated with their treatment, but importantly, they have found ways to live their best lives with their families and friends, despite the trauma of what life has thrown at them. Welcome to More Than a Lump, ladies.
Thanks, Aisling.
Anne and Carol, we've all become friends over the many years that you've been supporting and fundraising for Breast Cancer Ireland. You've attended loads of events and photo shoots together. You've both danced your socks off in Battle of the Stars, helping to raise thousands of euros, but also, it has to be said, having great fun and some good laughs along the way. Marion, I'm delighted to meet you again recently, having originally met when Breast Cancer Ireland helped the Plurabelle paddlers get their first dragon boat back many years ago. I'm very aware that all three of you have a very different story to share with our listeners, but I really wanted to devote an episode of More Than a Lump to some practical advice and some proactive and positive things and activities that can be considered to help women along their journey. I also wanted to have an honest discussion on the side effects and the activities that can help. I'll kick off with you, Anne. You were diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer in 2003. You had a mastectomy, 6 months of chemotherapy and 36 sessions of radiotherapy. For 10 years, you were cancer-free while taking a new drug. But 3 years after finishing the drug, you began to feel unwell and you were diagnosed with a different subtype of breast cancer in the other breast. Talk to me about when you received that second diagnosis and what practical things you'd been doing in those intervening years that may have actually helped you in the second time around.
Well, I think the second time around was absolutely shocked. I thought I was, thinking back of it now, I think I was more shocked the second time than I was the first time. Mm. And like the first time was like 19 years ago. So yeah. It's a long time ago. So the treatment we used to get then was dreadful. Like I know it wasn't, I shouldn't probably say dreadful, but it was a lot harder.
Oh, and it's so changed.
Yeah, it's so changed now. Yeah. I mean, that's how I can see the difference in all the money going into research and how we have benefited over the last like 19 years. Because 19 years ago, I know I put on 6 stone of weight. Now, because I wasn't with all the treatment I was getting, I just literally, I mean, I was waddling around. I just couldn't believe it. So I couldn't really go for walks. And I got every side effect going that you could possibly get. And actually what I done then, even though everybody's doing it now, is I took up sea swimming in the 40 foot.
Wow.
So that's where I was found every day because I wouldn't have the energy to go out walking or go after the activity. I had to be very careful where I went because of the treatment. So I used to go down every day and I'd stay there for quite a lot of the day and I made loads of friends and we'd go for a little walk and we'd catch up on the news and whatever was happening in the world. Mm. That was all discussed then and it was great.
Yeah, and then 19 years later, a completely different type of breast cancer in the other breast.
Completely different. And because I had been on a drug for 10 years from Beaumont Hospital under Professor Annie Hill, and my 10 years was up and I was over the moon when those 10 years were up because I thought, yes, because I suppose in a sense I probably had put on a little bit of, I mean, I blamed the tablets. I don't know whether the tablets could have been me, but I blamed the tablets on putting on the weight. But I do know when I finished the tablets, I happened to lose weight, quite a lot of it, and I was pure delight with life. And I thought, well, this has cured me completely. Uh-huh. I just feel on top of the world. And in that time, you had taken up doing all this lovely
dance, the Battle of the Stars,
and you name it. And I was there. And I have to say, it was fantastic. I mean, that helped people so much. And I don't think people realise how much support it gives to people that are going through treatment or have been, mm-hmm. or it's sort of a bit of normality back in life again, mm-hmm. and that you can take part in something that other people that has nothing wrong with them are
sure.
doing.
Sure.
So I found that I just felt it was fantastic, made loads of friends like Carol. I've only met Marion today, but you know, I just felt it was fantastic. Amount of people, the fun that we had, and all the people that we met. Mm-hmm. And of course, my fine thing is, you know, Prof Hill. I still was going to him for my annual checkups, and it was coming around a time, I think we had not long after coffee day, because yeah. I know we were coming around to I was due a mammogram, and one yeah. of the girls, I always remember, she brought me a mug with you were born with glitter in your bones or your veins or something, yeah. and I was in washing it and it splashed on me,
uh-huh.
and I don't know what made me think, uh-oh, that's something quite different, I haven't felt that in donkey's years.
Right.
And I knew I was due my mammogram, so I thought I'll wait. I had actually been in with Prof Hill giving a check-in, uh-huh. and we were getting photos. And I was going to say to him that day, and then I went, "Ah, no, sure, I'm in 2 weeks." Not thinking, no, you know, it's nothing. It's just some. I'll wait for my 2 weeks, and I went in. And it was a lovely girl, Siobhan. I think I had her for 3 years before that, and she said to me, "And how are you?" And I went, "Oh, I don't know. There's something." I said, "It could be nothing." And I remember I was going off Sorrento on my holidays. And she said, "Oh, you know, if you get a note now, don't panic around it. Just because you've told me something, you know, you're going mm-hmm. to be probably called in." I said, "Grand." I went off from my holiday to Sorrento. In the back of my mind, I actually remember going from Sorrento to Amalfi Coast, and I went, "I think you might have cancer." And don't ask me why I thought that.
Yeah.
Came back and I got brought in, and Deirdre Duke, Dr. Joe Duke, she, someone said, "Here, they're going to do a biopsy." I said, "This is it." And I actually did say it to Arnie Hill. I think, and he went, "Oh, no, and I don't think he believed it."
Yeah.
So when he had to actually tell me, I think God help me. I felt more sorry for him than I did myself.
Yeah.
Even though I was shocked. I think I was numb. Because I thought, how could I have it? And there was no lump.
Yeah.
There was no uncomfortableness. Like, there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. There was no tiredness. Like, where before that, I've always said this, your body is trying to tell you there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But only for I got a splash, something so simple. There was no lump, there was no rash, there was nothing.
Wow.
So that's how...
And the treatment plan that you were on the second time around?
Oh, so much. No, it's still not pleasant, but a hell of a lot shorter. And mm-hmm. I was not anyway as sick as mm-hmm. what I had been. So I could see the benefit of 19 years ago against in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
So 6 years ago, when I got the second one, which was a completely different cancer,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, but the first cancer was a tumour, this one was lobular.
Yeah.
So there was no signs. And apparently I think that's the most dangerous of them, because mm-hmm. you don't get any lumps and you don't get mm-hmm. any, you know, of the norm of what you're looking for.
Absolutely.
As I said, it was something as simple as hot water splashing.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable. And moving to you, Carol, you were 15, you were in your 50s when you were diagnosed. I remember you telling me that your enduring memory was being wheeled into an operating theatre and worrying that you'd never wake up from the operation to see your husband and six children again. Can you share some of the practical advice you would give to someone in their midlife who's about to face into that kind of course of treatment?
Yes, yes. Well, I think at that stage, I was full of fear. Mm-hmm. And the fear had overtaken my thoughts and everything, really. And also a fear, really, not myself and my illness, it was fear of frightening everybody around me, especially our kids. And because at that stage, you know, so many years ago, there wasn't enough explanation of what is really cancer is all about. It was the big C, and everybody, you know, thought, oh, it's a finale, but far from it, really. Mm-hmm. And I remember being so excited when I came out of a theater and just saw all my family around there again to greet me and say, "Mom, it's so lovely that you're here with us." Mm-hmm. And it was a lovely moment. I know mm-hmm. it shouldn't be a lovely moment, but I think that brought me joy that I got over that big event.
The terror of it,
yeah. really.
And were you breast aware? Like, were you going for regular mammograms? Were you, you know, I suppose, conscious of how to self-check? Or was this just out of the blue?
out of the blue, not a thing. I hadn't a clue, really. I think I'm one of these people that don't go really looking for trouble. And in a way, it's a type, the avoidance ain't great either. But that's the way I followed it all the way through. Just wait until, and I know it's not fair to say wait until really the crucial moment, but I was not aware.
And so you didn't check, you didn't find it yourself. It was probably through a mammogram.
I always had, you know, slightly lumpy breasts, really. And I had this lump on my breast for many, many years. Oh, good few years. And I went for a hysterectomy and I was checked at that time and there was nothing sinister about the lump, really. And then when I went for a mammogram, this lump became a bit, they were curious about it and sent me. Then I went to a surgeon and he diagnosed it as malignant. Now, after the needle biopsy initially, but I had this lump for many years, but it was actually hidden to a certain extent. And so probably with age, maybe it became more prominent, but I never thought that it was malignant, but it was.
And what was your treatment was radiation therapy?
Yes.
And obviously hormone therapy, drug therapy for a couple of years after that. And it's amazing, as you say, and as Anne has said, years ago, back in the early 2000s, the treatment was very different to what the treatment is today. And we know that through research. We know the advances we're making with new clinical trial drugs, and that life and everybody's treatment before, you possibly all got the same type of treatment. Whereas nowadays we know it's all personalized medicine. It's personalized treatment plans for very specific genetic profiling, which is key. And I suppose to you, Marion, you were initially diagnosed 9 years ago with early stage breast cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, so I was, to give my age away now, I was 41 when I was diagnosed. I had no family history. I had a pain in my breast, actually, which is usually, we're told, a good sign. And I thought, in all honesty, it was just where maybe an underwire bra was rubbing or something like that. And it was, I was just aware of it for a few days and I kind of had a little feel, but there was a distinct lump. Now, I did not check my breasts because, in all honesty, I thought, and I think a lot of us think, these things happen to other people. It's not going to happen to me. This all happens to other people and I'm in my little bubble and I'm going to be grand. And maybe it happens to older women. So I was kind of aware of the pain. I had a little feel of it and it was a distinct lump. So I kind of put my head in the sand for about a week, but no longer. And I kind of knew it wasn't right. So I went to my GP and she was very quick. She just said she had a very low threshold for referring. I went during my lunch break in work. And by the time I had got back to my desk in work, I had a call from the consultant's office for an appointment. And I knew at that stage she was concerned. And then I went in and the consultant did an exam and he said he wasn't sure, but they'd send me for assessment. And I went then for an assessment. A couple of days later, I had a mammogram and they said if they saw anything, they might do an ultrasound and or biopsy. And I had all of it. And I knew immediately. And they said, well, you know, will you? My husband was there and I came out to him and I said, I think there's something and I think they think there's something. So I think it was really clear to me early on. So long story short, I was diagnosed with stage 2 hormone positive breast cancer. So I had to have a number of surgeries. They thought initially I'd get away with lumpectomy, but I didn't. They thought it wasn't in my nodes, but it was in my lymph nodes. So I had a full clearance as well. And then I had to have a mastectomy as well. So I had 3 surgeries at that stage after never having a surgery in my life. My biggest fear, actually, when I was diagnosed was that I'd have to have surgery. Like, Carol, that was what I was fearful of. It wasn't like cancer. This was terrifying to me. Yeah. That sounds silly now with kind of all these years later, but it was a terrifying thing for me. And I had 3 kids and how to tell them. And they were, my eldest was a 15-year-old boy. It was difficult for him with his mom having breast cancer. And then I'd 11-year-old girl who, you know, had said to me, well, her auntie had found a lump and it was cancer and she died. And was that going to happen to me? And was it genetic? Even though she was only 11, she was concerned. And so all of those. And then my 9-year-old, and he was trying to mind his mammy and really difficult. My husband trying to keep everything together. But anyway, we went through it all, had the surgery, had chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and then I started on hormone therapy. Had some issues around the hormone therapy, and then I had to have a hysterectomy.
And can I ask you why the hysterectomy? Just because they were concerned?
No. I was having really, really heavy bleeding on tamoxifen. It was a rare thing. I wouldn't want anybody to be concerned. I was just a bit unlucky. So we had a bit of investigation and I needed a hysterectomy. That was recommended and that's what I had. And I went to my oncologist at that stage a couple of months after the hysterectomy, and I just said to her, you know, I'm just not feeling like I'm bouncing back like I thought I would. I remember one of the nurses in the hospital saying to me, it's the best thing ever. You won't know yourself. You'll be flying. And I wasn't flying. Mm-hmm. And I went to my oncologist and I said, you know, feel free to give me a kick up the backside here. I just don't feel. She said, I will not give you a kick up the backside. You know what? I was about 4 years out from the initial diagnosis. She said, you know what? We'll just do a CT scan. It's probably hormonal, but we'll just check. And then, so I had a CT scan, and that was in 2017. And they found what they hoped was a cyst on my liver. And it turned out not to be a cyst on my liver. It was a tumor. And it was breast cancer that had spread. So I was hugely unlucky, but I was also incredibly lucky because it was one spot and it was operable. So I had a liver resection.
Okay.
And then I had to do it all again. So I had chemotherapy again. But I knew, you know, second time round, I think you know, at least, you know the mountain is in front of you, but you'll know you'll get there. I was able to cold cap that time. I didn't lose my hair. That was easier for the kids because for me going to the school, it was hard for them. I was really conscious of how hard it was for them the first time round. So did chemotherapy again. And then I started one of these targeted therapy treatments that you mentioned, Aisling, and why I'm so grateful. And I love what Breast Cancer Ireland are about. I started palbociclib.
Oh, yes.
And I was on that for about 3 years and I've been able to drop that now. And I'm just on a hormonal treatment called anastrozole, which is really hard on my joints, but it's a tablet I take every day and I'm keeping well. And I'm so, so thankful for the research that has me sitting here. You would never know. I think any of you would say you would never know to look at me.
Absolutely.
And I attribute that to the treatments I've had, but also, you know, I remember my oncologist and my radiation oncologist saying to me, the best things you can do for yourself is keep active and try and keep a healthy weight. Mm-hmm. And I really believe in personal responsibility. Like, I want to help myself. I'm not going to be passive about this. So that's what I've done. And and here I am today, thank God, 5 years later, and doing so well and so thankful for it.
Absolutely. And I talked to so many different people throughout the course of the podcast and otherwise. And really, clinical trials have come on hugely. Like, there is a fantastic drugs now available for metastasis to the liver, to the bones, etc. I suppose the most challenging one is to the brain. And that's one that we are constantly investing in because it requires a significant amount of money. And we're doing a huge international collaboration with the likes of the Ludwig Center in Chicago. And we are making headway, which is great, because I do want to get to a point sooner rather than later that we transform this disease into a treatable long-term illness that can be maintained. That's the ultimate end game. I mean, we got a vaccine for COVID, for goodness sake, globally, as we all came together. So why can we not, you know, really come together and do this for this particular cancer? Yeah. Tell me about the Pleurabelle Paddlers, because I suppose way back in the early days of Breast Cancer Ireland, I will remember Fiona Lord of Mercy and her coming in to me and saying, oh, Aisling, we would just love, we've no money, but could Breast Cancer Ireland support us with the purchase of one of the Dragon boats, the HSE, I think we're going to do the other one. I remember thinking to myself, what is this about? Yeah. And when she explained the benefit of the rowing action with women who have lymphedema post-surgery, you know, a stiffness, et cetera, or, you know, a swelling, that to avoid it or to alleviate it, it all became really relatable, I suppose. Yeah. And I remember saying to the board, look, we have to support these people. This is a great thing to do in the community. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with them.
Yeah, we're so thankful to you for that, actually. So Pleurabelle Paddlers were the first dragon boat club in Ireland. It's a breast cancer club. It's all breast cancer survivors. So it started in 2010, and thanks to BCI in part. I learned about it in the hospital, actually, after having my auxiliary clearance and the physio came in. And I was petrified of getting this thing called lymphedema. Oh my God, it sounded horrific. And, you know, the nurses as well, they were very well intentioned. They were trying to educate me. I was terrified, in all honesty, about lifting a shopping bag. It's like, what is this thing going to happen to me? There's so much fear around the diagnosis. You're just, I think, paralyzed nearly. But anyway, one of the physios mentioned the pleural paddlers, because I was saying, what can I do? What can I do to help myself? That was really what I wanted. And they mentioned the pleural paddlers. And I thought, that sounds terrific fun. So when I was through all my treatments and I'd had my reconstruction and everything, I joined the Pluribels in 2016. And in all honesty, I am not a very naturally outgoing person. So it's really out of my comfort zone to join this big gang of women with all these wonderful personalities, and they're loud and they're proud and they're brilliant. But there was something there that really kept me coming back. And they were so warm and welcoming. It was overwhelming for somebody like me, but I kept doing it because I knew in my heart of hearts it was really good for me to do it. And so I joined in 2016 and I was really getting into the swing of it. And then I had the recurrence in 2017. So I had to stop when I was going through chemotherapy again. And I have to credit them, in all honesty, with saving me in 2017, because I was devastated. I was on my hands and knees, both physically, but mentally as well. You know, a metastatic diagnosis, I didn't know if I'd see that Christmas. Or if I saw Christmas, was that my last Christmas? And they just, you know, metaphorically, I suppose, embraced me. They supported me, not in a real in-your-face kind of way. They'd check in. Anytime I'd go down, you'd be welcome for a cup of tea when I wasn't paddling. And then as soon as I'd finished chemotherapy, again, you wait 3 months and then you can go back paddling. I didn't know what I'd be able to do when I got into that boat that day. And I was able to rebuild myself, in all honesty. And, you know, they take you as they find you. Everybody,
all ages,
from, we have members in their 30s right up into their 70s. There is a place for everyone in that boat. There is some women that are really competitive. I'd be fairly competitive now, I never thought I was. And then there's some that are, they just want to go and paddle around and have a bit of a laugh. That's okay too. It's whatever. There's something for everyone. And it's just, I have to say, they have taught me how to live again. They are the most wonderful bunch of ladies. I'm so, so grateful to them.
And Carol, you in your, you know, a couple of years ago, I know definitely before COVID, probably maybe 5 or 6 years ago, you were very involved with Pluribel too.
Yes.
And you loved that whole camaraderie and support of all of these women.
Yes. Absolutely amazing. And even the workup before starting, you do the exercise together, there's a togetherness in it.
Yeah.
And then there's always somebody, if you're new, to help you into it. And imagine, I would often say to people, well, I'm going to row a boat now. And they'd say, you're going to row a boat? How can you do that? Well, it's just with the help, you just got into it, and these big heavy oars, and you're pulling back there, you're in the middle of water. There's no danger of anything, and no talk of any sadness. It's all go, and it helps the bingo wings as well. You probably don't know what that is. You're all too young, Carol.
I don't think you have any bingo wings now, will you stop?
So it was lovely, and the support was fantastic, and the water, the whole exercise game was.
There's something very calming about water.
I find it, I would say it's healing. I think for me it's healing, and we're so lucky we're in the Grand Canal dock, and it's just, there's a bit of life around it. It's lovely. But a Saturday morning in particular, and say last Saturday morning, the weather was beautiful and the sun sparkling along the water. It's just so peaceful, calming, I think healing.
Yeah. It's heavenly, those ions.
It's heavenly. Heavenly.
Yeah. It's the ions that kind of combat the whole, you know, the city and the smog and the stress and all of that. And then you get the water and it's like, calms it all down.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
No, well, I mean, isn't that why everybody took to the water and jumped before COVID?
I think so,
Like, you know, you've been there for a long time before it, but it's like everybody, it's like Sandy Cove, the 44.
Yeah.
You couldn't get near the place.
I know.
I mean, for years we were going, having a great time, and then you can't get, when everybody should have been separated. We were all like,
well, you were ahead of, you were ahead of your game, well, 20 years ago, sea swimming.
But listen,
unlike all the dry robes around at the moment, and I know I'm laughing now at you,
Marianne. I have one too.
I remember, actually, funny enough, when I went down, because the women were saying down, and the men, actually, because we used to have great sing songs of somebody's birthday, the cake would be brought down and everybody would be saying, and in the winter time, they used to have brandy and butter in their tea and their coffee, I can tell you.
Warm you up.
Really party time. Yeah. I was part of the 11 o'clock. They were fantastic people. Raised a lot of money for cancer, they did as well. And but like it was such to be get up, as you're saying, going down there, to get up and know you're going down to see, it was like as if somebody just, it was like being baptized again, getting in and getting out. You were two different people going down and getting out, you know. It's just, I think it's healing to me, whether it's in early in the morning or late at night. If you're on the sea or down near the sea, it's just like you breathe in, it's heavenly, it's like somebody's sending you something. And I'm sure, Carol, you were the same when you joined that. I did try to join. I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody didn't answer the phone.
Can we get you in a boat yet?
We will.
Well, I've been on the cruises.
No, we'll get you in one of those dragon boats.
Love the cruises. But actually, Mary and I, we're like, aren't we, like twins in our treatment?
A lot of similar treatments.
Aren't we?
One of the things I have found, actually, when I was going through the heavier treatment the second time round, fatigue was a huge issue for me. And there was days where I really just wanted to go back to bed. And when we have a little app and you sign up and you're committing to go to training and the boat and everything, I said, oh God, I just want to go back to bed, but I'll go because I've said I'll go and we need to balance boats and stuff. And you just go. And then there's a thing with exercise. It seems counterintuitive when you're tired and you're fatigued, but actually if you can move your body, it really just energizes you. And then you sleep so well the next, you know, that night. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge thing for me. I noticed when I was going through treatment the second time round, or, you know, all that heavier treatment. When I went, there was days I thought, oh God, I'd just love to be in bed now. But I'd get into the boat. And then when I was coming back in, when we were coming back into dock, it's like, oh, I'm still tired, but it's a different kind of tired.
Yeah. The sea breeze or whatever it is about the sea makes everybody have a good night's sleep, I think, the breeze that's there. And what were your side effects like, Carol, when you had your initial treatment? Had you any kind of side effects that were tough?
Not really. I couldn't say I had any, probably a bit of leaking, you know, around my breast type of thing, which was a little bit startling, really. But I actually can't say anything because I think I was in another world, actually, and didn't think of really or didn't realize what was happening to me. Mm-hmm. As you were saying, Marion, the fear takes over and I just didn't realize. And also, too, maybe I did feel a sense of side effects, not of the treatment, but a little bit of loneliness in my head. I went on the journey on my own, rather than make other people fearful, or kids, family, and everything. And that was a little bit isolating going for my treatment because I chose to do it alone. But I wouldn't do it again because then the kids didn't know what was happening. Was I going to survive? Was it very severe? Was I suffering? Because I didn't want to upset them.
Yeah.
And as you'd say, they heard stories, and now they were quite adults, but they'd hear of somebody else and they'd hear something on television and they'd be reading the papers. Gosh, that's what my mother has. My God, that we are going to be in the same situation.
Yeah, so you put on the brave face like most mammies do.
Which in a way wasn't really the proper thing to do for them either, because I kept them in the dark and I was very much in the dark myself. But the way I looked at it, there was light at the end of the tunnel. I did realize that. I kept saying there is light at the end of the tunnel.
It's amazing. I often speak to people and they would talk about, you know, the fear never really goes away. Mm. You know, no matter if you have it once, twice, you know, it doesn't matter.
I have to say, I know it sounds, I don't fear about getting anything now. Well, after getting that the first time and then the second time, I just don't think anymore. I think after being through what we've been through, I think it made us all stronger. Would you agree? In the sense, I feel I could deal with an awful lot of things more than I would have. I think I would have sailed. I think it was a person that used to sail through life. Life was for living and enjoying yourself and all that. And I think that it just made me stronger. There's lots of other things that has happened. And when you have to do things. And really, it can be, even though with all your family and friends around, it can be a very lonely place because, mm-hmm. as I say to people, it's like anything, be your faith or anything. When you're in the hospital at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody else there, only you. You have to have that conversation with yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think I just sort of, the way I got through both of them was, when I got a start date off, be it drop their gores off the fine thing, whoever it was, I start on that date and I knew I was going
Can
to finish
I just interrupt
that.
You one moment? Because our listeners won't know who Drop Dead Gorgeous is and the fine thing. Oh. And while I really don't want to have this aired.
You do.
I don't really. Explain to them who Drop Dead Gorgeous and your fine thing are.
Okay, Drop Dead Gorgeous is David Fenney. He is an oncologist in
Honest
Vincent's
to goodness.
Hospital. And he is Drop Dead Gorgeous. Without a shadow of a doubt, 19 years ago, and he's still Drop Dead Gorgeous. And my fine thing is Professor Arnie Hill, which you know very well, and he is definitely improving with life. He's younger looking, he's getting there.
I hope he's not listening.
He is fantastic. And you know something? Those two men and other people have got me through, got mm-hmm. me to where I am today mm-hmm. because I put my trust in them. Mm-hmm. And like, it's probably our friend, and Carol knows Ev, she always says they sort of guard me in the sense because Absolutely. I'm not a person that wants to go in and say, what's happening to you and what are you getting? Are you getting this and what's mm-hmm. that tablet for? I don't care. If you tell me to take, I'll swallow it mm-hmm. and that's it. Yeah. I don't care whether it's what it does
yeah,
or what
it's
it does.
True.
Doesn't.
They're like the army on your working and on your behalf.
They do. And they, you know, it's like when I went back to, and like Marion was saying, I got cancer the third time. When I went for a checkup, I remember the consultant, the professor that done where I got it on the lung, he said to me, you know, it could come back. And I'm like looking and thinking, I'm really on the floor here. What are you, but he's telling me it's going to come back for. And I ended up going back to Drop Dead Gorgeous just for another check for us. And I said it to him and he goes, you are kidding me. He didn't say that to you. He says, don't mind him. I wouldn't have sent you for an operation if I thought that. And I'm going, you see, that's how I'm guarded in the sense. There's no need. I don't think that, I'm just one of those people. I don't need to know everything. I just need to know basis. Yeah. So if you tell me something, and if I trust you, and I think that's where the most important thing, would you agree that you put your trust in your consultants or your...
What do you think, Marianne?
I only see my oncologist now and I absolutely trust her, Janice Walsh. Mm. However, I do, and I'm not questioning her judgment or anything, but I do like to understand, why am I on this and not on that? What's this? What's the palbociclib? What's that going to do? Why am I having chemotherapy? And first before, just for me, for my head, it's just, I need to understand. And once I understand it, then we go. And I'm not questioning her judgment at all, but I do need to know, and I am awful for Googling. Anybody who says to me, don't Google, I just go and Google. That's exactly the wrong thing to do. And I think that's just my way. And I always have, it's not really great for my anxiety, to be honest, but that's what I do. And I know, you know, there's so many trials and there's so many things. And that reassures me, actually, to know that I'm doing really, really well, God forbid, and we're not even going to go there in case it ever happened again. It won't, please God. But I know that there's so much stuff in development. And that's how I handle it. Mm-hmm. And that's, what I would say is, everybody has to find their own way of doing it. It's, you know, you do your way, I do mine. They're both right for us. It's whatever is right for you. And I would never advise somebody what they should and shouldn't do because unfortunately you have to find your own way.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's right, what I'm saying.
They sort of guard me and I'm happy to let them do it because I think you've enough to worry about in the day. So there is, and that's just a personal thing to me.
Yeah.
But I think, like, looking back, as I say, 19 years ago, and I on that trial drug for 10 years, like, that kept that cancer away for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And to me now, looking at younger people being diagnosed, it's not a death sentence anymore. Like, I remember, like, 19 years ago, like, it was the big C. Nobody said breast cancer. Nobody said. It was always the big C. And you're going, what do you mean? It was like to see, wait, I'll tell you something. The big C.
Yeah.
What big C?
They're whispering about it.
You know, it's awful where I think now that people, you know, it's... To me, if you hear, it's not a death sentence anymore because it has really evolved so much over the 19 years. With all the research now, and I think, and I've said this before, they will eventually get it, that it will be like a diabetic getting mm-hmm. treatment. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't that be wonderful? And you can live to see your children growing up and taken away from you.
It's even if we look at this new clinical trial drug that we've just started, and we're Breast Cancer Ireland is funding it. It's called the Shamrock trial in the new Beaumont Breast Centre. And it's looking at HER2 positive subtype breast cancer. And it's looking at recurrence that can happen. And it can happen about 30% to people who have had a HER2 diagnosis. But we're looking now at giving these people a fourth generation drug. Got a big long name, I'm not going to go there. And an initial chemotherapy for maybe a month. Then de-escalating the need for that chemotherapy, and they continue on this drug. And we're predicting that in 2 to 3 years, we will have a 100% response rate. So that's like tick box cure for that particular subtype of breast cancer. And I mean, never did I think I'd get to that point over the last, 10, 15 years in this space of that we will actually have a cure. Now, unfortunately, there are lots of permutations and lots of subtype breast cancers. But at least if we do one and we get a positive response rate mm-hmm. from that particular one, we're moving on. We're also supporting triple negative breast cancer, which again is a challenging one because it tends to happen to lots of younger women. And they tend to, at the moment, the research is poor. So we're trying to put a lot of funding into this research because they go through the age-old treatment of chemo, surgery and radiation therapy. These are younger women who are of childbearing age. Fertility is affected. They're plunged into early menopause. So we're trying to look at a way and say, can we not come up with a drug that is better where they don't need chemotherapy to damage the organs but where and to kill the tumor, but we can give them something that's targeted specifically for the tumor and protects everything else. So we're doing that with Queen's University in Belfast. And as I said, the other we're doing is in the whole area of metastatic disease, because it's an area that there's lots done in relation to a lot of the major organs, but the brain is the one that we find most challenging.
So that's the one
that we really want to mm-hmm. I think if we do that, then we have all remits covered. You know, and we will get to that point where, please God, you know, we are not seeing any more fatalities. So, Carol, I know that there was one particular exercise that you took on board as part of your, I suppose, recovery and coming through the other side. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, that was a wonderful experience. The dancing. It was amazing.
Battle of the stars.
Strictly dancing, and with the help of Aisling and the girls and Kira and Sam and everybody. It was like another big adventure in my life that I enjoyed so much. And it was part of the embracing recovery, really. And also when getting quickly to the performance in all the wonderful places that you took us to dance, and the rehearsal, the excitement regarding that was amazing. And I remember one in particular, all of them were fantastic, but especially in the convention center. Mm. And I was dancing to a candle, the Waltz Candle on the Wind with Charlie Bird, which
That's
was a
right.
very memorable event, really. And Charlie came over to me and he said, I can't put one foot past another. And I said, well, here's your friend, and I can't either. And we danced. We were like, Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire dancing in the convention center like movie stars in front of 1,000 people. And to me, that was a most enjoyable and encouraging event, because there were so many people out there who supported us, came there because they were ill. The family was ill. Most of them would have experience of cancer. And Anne was involved in that too. And there we were, like movie stars up on the stage. No fear
That's right.
of anything. And it was just fantastic. I'll never forget it. And Candle in the Wind.
That's right.
And Elton John playing it.
For
and,
Diana, yeah.
And
right.
Princess Diana.
Yeah.
The whole memory of that. And as a result, I did appreciate Charlie even dancing with me, even though his toes could have been a little bit damaged. So much so that I climbed Kirkpatrick for him this year, climb with Charlie. Mm. And I was right there at the top with him, supporting him, because it was payback time. Yeah. He supported me and I supported him. At 76 years of age. Oh my God, I know I shouldn't tell it, but it was published in the Sunday Times. This reporter came behind me and I think he said, who's this old one? How's she doing here?
Yeah.
So I, just in walking with him,
that's
sliding and him lifting me, I didn't know who he was. I told him my story I came to support Charlie.
Yeah, yeah. I can remember all those years ago when Charlie, I had approached him to do the dance with us. And I said, you know, I'm going to partner you with this lovely lady. And he initially, yes, I'll come. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I'd love to help out. And then he went to the rehearsals and it was like, Aisling, I can't dance. This is really not for me. I really feel as if I've two left feet. I'm banging off Carol. I'm banging into the wall. I'm so useless. And I was saying, no, you're not. You're fabulous. And to be fair, he stuck it out. And actually, Claire, his wife, was the backbone, you know, encouraging him to stick with it and that it would be all right on the night. And yeah. It was fantastic.
Oh, it was amazing. Mm. I will never forget
great,
it.
Great memory.
Most memorable event. And thanks to all of you and Lore CSI and BCI. You were amazing to... You helped us.
Uh-huh. And Anne, you took part in many a battle of the stars.
I had such a great time. I really did. Mm-hmm. I just think, as Carol is saying, because I think that was the first time, the convention centre, it was twice. And I remember that was film star. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, do you remember we went down with, I was with Eric Lawler.
Eric Lawler.
And he was something else. I mean, Eric Lawler was like... I was Tina Turner, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right. And Big wheels was, keep on turning.
Who was Tina Turner's partner? Oh, what's it called? Austin Powers. Oh, he dresses like Austin Powers.
Was like Austin
Powers. And he had this purple suit on. And I remember him saying, "Now, Anne, we were at the door. You know when the doors
That's
are open,
right.
we're waiting to open." And he goes, "Just go in, do whatever you want. I'm telling you now." And I was looking. I thought we were to be, you know, walk up nicely and all this. He literally worked that room.
The oh, he did. It was in. Fantastic.
And he just said, he pulled off his jacket, and there he was, like with a babe. On the I couldn't stop laughing on the stage because I hadn't seen this. Like, I'd seen his proper suit, but this babe
right.
thing. And I thought, oh my God. And we went down these like limousines down onto the. Well, it was, and that was part of my recovery as well. Mm-hmm. And like, when Sam rang me that day and said, Anne, you're going to dance. Mm-hmm. Me? And here was, what? Me? Dance? I couldn't dance. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, it was absolutely amazing. And we met Carol and we met Ev, we met mm-hmm. yourself,
well,
everybody.
There's been so many people that have come together as a result
fantastic.
Of those.
Oh.
Types
yeah.
of events, you know.
I was at one with the one that Emma Hannigan danced at.
Oh, yes.
I was at
one.
Yeah.
I thought you might have been.
Tina Turner.
It was brilliant.
My gold shimmy dress
when
and
you
boots.
Were
I still have them.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Like, we won, actually, didn't we? The second.
You did.
We got
That's
we
right.
got the most entertainment.
That's right.
He was. Now, I have to tell you, I was on the stage, like, in stitch. I was like this in shock when I saw him with this big, fancy Brit. He was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And then the year that Carol was talking about was with Adrian Kennedy. And like Adrian at that time, they were sort of saying he was the mouth of the south or the east or something.
Yeah.
And he was as quiet as anything.
Yeah,
was so
that's right.
He was absolutely petrified.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how could you be petrified?
You're
you have
radio
to
all
help
the time.
Me.
Yeah. But you know, I suppose it's events like that people, you know, it's coming outside your comfort zone. And it's doing things like you, Marianne, and Plurabelle's, you know, it's something that you would never have thought you'd have got involved in. It's coming outside your comfort zone and knowing that there are people there who will support you all the way through. Well, Anne and Marianne and Carol, thank you so much for joining me today on our podcast, More Than a Lump.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.